Today I have on the show Brian Schimmel. Brian works for Multifamily Risk Advisors, and believe me, you want him on your team when making multifamily investments. Today, he gives an interview of some less understood topics for managing multifamily risk, and this is an episode not to miss. So let's get started.
All right. So Brian, tell me a little bit about yourself and your company.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Reid. My name is Brian Schimmel. I'm with Multifamily Risk Advisors. We provide insurance and risk services strictly for multifamily. We represent clients throughout the country. I'm located here in Florida, work with a lot of our catastrophic properties being in the area, but I have clients, I don't think in every state, but close to it. I've got properties throughout the country that I insure. And, we do work with a lot of very well-known entities in the industry that I think a lot of people would recognize, and also work with the, aspiring, investors that are building a portfolio. I think what we kind of bring to the table is just a very deep level of expertise and knowledge of multifamily insurance as well as the multifamily industry. So we tend to get our clients insured at the right price and take a lot of the burden of administering the insurance and placing the insurance off of their out of their hands.
Yeah, so insurance is a very interesting animal. I think to a lot of investors or apartment owners, it's just kind of another number on the expense line, but I think it's a lot more than that. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about why you think it's a little bit more important than just a number and some things that we need to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's surprising to me sometimes to see the people that have put insurances in place, not paid, hardly any attention to it, and are sometimes completely unaware of what their financial exposure might be. I mean, especially when you start talking about catastrophic, coverages like your wind coverages that are on percent deductibles, and then you can get into very, nuanced, terms of the policy that have huge financial, impact. And, and now what you're seeing is you're seeing where these wind coverages were first implemented, in areas like Florida's and South Carolina's, the coastal exposed, areas. There's been so much loss occurring. I mean, in Texas and in the Midwest now that you're starting to see the same types of wind structures being imposed in those areas, and a lot of people are just unaware. And, and this isn't just to talk about wind, say that's the only area. There's a variety of different coverages that sometimes people don't understand or don't have in place that could, again, have huge financial impact at time of claim.
So what you mentioned wind, what are some of those overlooked coverages, that maybe aren't considered that would turn into a devastating loss for the owner?
Yeah, I mean, probably the easiest and most common example I see is that, if I were to ask 90% of my insurers, even some pretty sophisticated investors, hey, what does your wind coverage look like? They're going to throw a percentage at me. They're going to say, I have a 3% wind deductible or 5% wind deductible. And then the million-dollar question is, well, what is that, it could be 1%, but what is that 1% or 3% or 5%, what does it apply to? Does it apply on a per-building basis, or does it imply on the total insured value of the property? So you think about that. I mean, that could have, a huge impact. I mean, you take a $30 million property, for example, I don't know, 300-unit property or something like that, and, if that 3% or 5% applies on 30 million, that's a huge deductible that you're going to have to deal with, rather than if that same deductible percentage applied on a per building basis, where, you might have, 10 buildings each valued at 3 million. And so now that percent deductible applies on 3 million instead of 30 million. And, that's one term. And the other one that sometimes I have more trouble convincing people of, but living here in Florida, and I actually lived through it personally even before I was in the insurance business, and that's multiple storms. And so, great, you have a 3% wind deductible. Well, does that wind deductible, is it on a calendar year basis, or is it on a per storm, per occurrence basis? So, it's surprising how often you have one hurricane or tropical storm hit, and then there's another one right behind it coming in. And so, you know, if that deductible is on a calendar year basis, well, you have to meet it once. But if that deductible is on a per occurrence or per storm basis, you know, you meet it for the first storm, and after all the damage is done, and then here comes the second storm, you got to start all over again. And you know, and then the another component of it is, you know, is that percent deductible, is it, does it apply just to hurricanes, or does it apply to named storms? Preferably, you want it just to apply to hurricanes, so then tropical storms fall under an all other wind or the all other peril deductible, which is much lower, you know, but so the hurricane's preferable. But if it's a named storm, you know, tropical storms are named storms. So, you know, you would have to be meeting that higher deductible for both tropical and hurricane events. So I know it's it gets complicated. I know I probably just lost half your listeners with that. But, you know, the key point I would say is that, you know, understanding these coverages, you don't have to understand the ins and outs of them, but it kind of goes back to what I was I said earlier when I positioned our firm. You need somebody who knows them very well so that they can put you in the best possible position that you could be in when a claim happens for something like that.
Yes, I think most people think of deductibles as a flat amount, you know, like a straight dollar, but so you're talking, these are percentage deductibles. Can you explain a little bit about the differences?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you get into a policy, you're going to have, everybody thinks of a fire. Well, you know, the fire almost always falls under, you know, your lowest, what's called your all other peril deductible. 10,000 is pretty common deductible amount you see. But, you know, when you get into some of these percent deductibles that I'm talking about, you know, they, you know, everything in a catastrophic area, coastal area by that, is you're going to see these wind coverages on a percent basis. And now, you know, over the last few years, there has been such so many claim events happen in Texas, in the Midwest, these areas, that you're seeing many carriers impose that same type of structure for wind coverage in non-coastal areas. So you know, they break up your deductibles again by the cause of loss. And you know, sometimes, yes, if you have a property that's not in any sort of wind prone or wind exposed area, then it might all fall under the all other peril deductible of like 10,000 or less. But there are, you know, many parts of the country right now that are being introduced and having to deal with these percent deductibles. And I see a lot of people just not pay that much attention to them. But when you live in some place like Florida, anybody that owns a property in Florida understands them very well. So, because it does.
So let's talk a little bit about that then. You know, when we're deciding a deductible, or, you know, to go with replacement cost or actual cash value, how do you determine where to set those?
Well, you know, it's driven by a lot of factors, okay? You know, first of all, your carrier, believe it or not, has some input in terms of what valuation that they're comfortable with. Your lender has some input, you know, and then, you know, the owner itself obviously has some input in those. And, you know, typically when you talk about like garden style apartments, 2-3 story apartment complexes, multiple buildings, in, you know, non-metro areas, you know, just various parts of the country, common valuation you see is like $75 per square foot, which tends to be acceptable to both Fannie and Freddie. It's acceptable to most carriers, and tends to be in line with what most insureds are looking at. Now, when you get into masonry, you know, higher levels of construction like masonry, non-combustible, mid-rise, high-rise, that you can get into a lot of different valuations, but just for example purposes, let's talk about like garden style apartments. You know, you can have a pretty uniform valuation that's used on those for most parts of the country. So it's the gross square feet of the property multiplied by that valuation. And then, you know, you always want your coverage written on a replacement cost basis, which means that there's just no depreciation factored in. But this is a real interesting point, and it's the thing that I have to deal with every single day have to navigate. And I also see so many of my insureds that are in the process of purchasing a property are not real well aware of something that deals with the actual cash value or replacement cost that you're talking about with respect to roofs. The carriers, again, have been stung over the last few years with so many claims of having to replace people's roofs that almost all carriers we're dealing with will not provide this replacement cost coverage, which you want and which Fannie and Freddie require, a key point. So if you're getting a loan, Fannie and Freddie require it. These carriers will not offer replacement cost coverage on roofs that are much older than 15 years. And so if they get older than 15 years, they'll cover them, no problem, but they're going to cover them on an actual cash value basis, which means they're going to factor in depreciation. They're just going to give you what they estimate they're worth today. And so, you know, this is huge for people that, you know, might be in the process of purchasing a property. Maybe it has 16, 17, 18-year-old roofs on it that aren't leaking. But what they don't realize is that you're probably not going to be able to get a carrier that will cover those on a replacement cost basis, and your lender's not going to extend the loan unless you have coverage on a replacement cost basis. So there's been several scenarios here of late where, you know, the insureds either walked away from a property that they spent a lot of time and money on during due diligence, strictly from the standpoint of they were going to have to replace the roofs. Or, you know, I've had a couple where they've just had to extend a major capital expenditure and replace the roofs just so they can get the coverage that Fannie and Freddie requires. Does that make sense? Or did I delve too deep there?
No, that's very good. It's interesting to know. We had talked about that on the property I'm looking at right now, and it was an interesting predicament that none of the other insurance carriers asked me. So, that's
And here's an interesting tidbit on that is that, you know, any agent just takes the information that's given them and gives it to the carrier. And, you know, now the carrier might come out and do an inspection a couple months after the fact, but, you know, oftentimes, you know, I see clients time and time again, you know, hey, how old are the roofs on them? Oh, they're 5 years. Okay. So we report to the carrier they're 5 years old. And then all of a sudden the insurance inspection occurs or the underwriter finds out, you know, asks deeper questions. And lo and behold, we find out the roofs are 20 years old. Well, you're going to see in most of these quotes, they're going to stipulate any roofs over 15 years are on an actual cash value basis. And so it's one of these things that can slip. It can slip through the cracks. And I preach to people to really, really understand it. And it kind of goes to what one of the big services we provide our clients. And that's just the due diligence support. So when somebody's looking at an OM of a property, you know, if it's an on-market deal or, you know, if it's an off-market deal, we tell them what questions they need to ask. Because the other big factor is wiring. You know, if you get pre-1973 wiring on most properties, there's a good chance it might be aluminum wiring. And many carriers will not cover aluminum wiring. They have full aluminum wiring exclusion. Others will cover it. They just want to be aware of it. And a lot of times we do see just, you know, people just kind of filling a form out, just say, hey, copper. And I can tell you right now that, you know, if there are carriers to where if you tell them it's aluminum and then all of a sudden you have a fire due to aluminum wiring, or you tell them it's copper, excuse me, and then you have a fire due to aluminum wiring, it's going to be an event that could very well and, in fact, most likely will not be covered by the carrier. And so, you know, it's always the same thing for us over and over and over again. So, you know, we can work with people that are looking to buy a property and we can just go through and say, hey, you know, ask them the five or six, you know, hot button items, get answers to them. And then we can go in there and we can put the proper coverage in place and advise them on anything that they might not be, you know, seeing or thinking about. But, you know, roofs and wiring, I would say, are the two hot button ones that you just got to know. And not only do you just don't need somebody to tell you, you need to verify, you know, because with aluminum wiring, we remediated it. Okay, what'd you remediate it with? Copalum, Alumicon, what technology was used? Because the underwriters are going to ask the questions. And if you're not being asked them, then that's a real that's a tip off that there could be a problem there at the agent level, because this is pretty basic stuff that you got to provide to the underwriters. And some people will just sit there and scribble down whatever needs to be scribbled down and hope that you don't have a claim. But remember, you're purchasing this insurance because, you know, there is a chance you are going to have a claim.
Well, I think that kind of answers one of my questions. I wanted to ask what separates you from a typical insurance broker. I think you kind of summed all that up in that last statement, but is there anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I touched on, you know, some of it. I mean, it's the fact is, you know, hey, this is the most overused term, you know, in American business today. You know, you want to be a partner with your clients, you know. But really, that's kind of how we operate. I mean, we work with our clients. We're not just some sort of quote shop that spins out quotes and hopes we got the lowest price. That's really not, you know, our gig at all. You know, we want to work with people that recognize the value in what we do. And, you know, and we go in there and help them acquire these properties. We help them get the deal, you know, over the goal line, advise them on things they might not be thinking about, you know, work with them to help them control their insurance costs, but not just from a premium perspective. You know, we look at it from what's called a total cost of risk. So, you know, premium is one component of that, but the other things that you got to look at, you know, are, you know, your cost of claims, your cost of administering your program, you know, and, you know, all the components that go into what you're ultimately spending on managing your risk. And that's, you know, what kind of drives us and I think separates us from just a lot of people out there that are just trying to put the lowest number. I mean, you and I had to push this call for a few minutes because I was doing a presentation, and you know, during the presentation, you know, we were looking at a pretty large premium for a property, and one proposal had, our proposal had coverage for what was called ordinance and law, which addresses if you were to have a partial loss of a property and the property had to be torn down, we had full coverage for what's called ordinance and law. I could go into the details, but let me tell you, it's a huge, huge, huge coverage. And they had an alternative quote that looked to be equivalent to ours, but didn't include ordinance and law coverage. So this was a 1953 property. So 1953, the building codes have changed a lot between then and now. And if you were to lose 50% of that building to a fire or something like that, I can guarantee you the building department's going to require, you know, the other half to be torn down. They're going to require it to be brought up to new building code. There's going to have to be major demolition. And unless you have that ordinance and law coverage in place, you wouldn't have coverage for it. And so, you know, as soon as they realized that, they were like, oh my gosh, these things aren't apples to apples. And they're not. I mean, again, I understand this stuff is not the fun stuff to talk about. I was an insurance buyer for a lot of years and I hated dealing with it. Okay. I had my own business, and I, you know, for 10 years, I sat there and purchased insurance. And when I came over to the other side, you know, 10 years ago and started doing this, you know, I was just, at first it just struck me as how exposed I was in so many different areas and how little I knew about it. And you know, so it, again, not the funnest part of the deal, but if you don't think it's important, I hate to be so bold, but you're sadly mistaken with that, because the most sophisticated people that we work with, the ones that successfully time and time again are able to acquire properties, they're paying a lot of attention to it because they get it. It's the people that don't think it's important, don't want to pay attention to it, don't value it in any way. Somehow, you know, they very rarely are able to grow that portfolio much. And so that's just kind of a little sidebar comment that I have on.
Well, it's definitely a very important point, you know, because I think it is so very overwhelming that, you know, you really have to try and decide, you know, am I being overly cautious or under cautious? So it's definitely a large topic, and it's worth delving into. I know you comment and say it's not an exciting topic, but it is very important, and it's a large item on the expense, so it should be treated with that respect. But
it is, and you know, the other comment I would have is the type of market that we're in right now. You know, I've talked a lot about acquisitions. I mean, obviously, we take clients over existing portfolios all the time and redo their insurance. form and find all sorts of mistakes in an existing portfolio. But, you know, for the last probably 6 to 7 years, you know, insurance costs have been falling for multifamily. And so everybody's been sitting there for the past, you know, 6, 7 years and thinking their agent's doing a great job with them because they got a flat renewal or it went down a little bit. And all that changed last year. And so if you're looking at a property to buy using the seller's number from last year, insurance number, it just doesn't apply. I mean, it doesn't apply for a lot of reasons, but the market, just the market alone, I can tell you, it does not, that number does not apply, you know, anymore. And, you know, we're entering what's called, or entering, we're in right now what's called a very hard market, meaning carriers are pulling coverages back. They're not offering as much. They're seeking big rate increases. On the casualty side, general liability carriers, there have been several that have just exited the market. So the ones that have remained have, are really seeking to get a premium. And so in general, you're seeing insurance cost across the board go up. And, you know, finding this out 2 weeks before your renewal date is worthless because you're probably just not going to have time to address it, you know. And so, you know, I would say that, you know, getting out in front of it, realizing what market we're in, making sure your insurance is correct, and you know, but also verifying that you're paying the right amount is extremely important in this market. A lot of people are getting caught off guard at renewal, you know, and that hadn't been the case for the past few years.
So when should people reach out to you? So you've got new buyers. Mm-hmm. When should they reach out and contact you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, new buyers, I mean, I would say, you know, at least, you know, a couple months before you plan to close on it. You know, honestly, what I say is, because it goes to our due diligence services, you know, if you're getting ready to put a bid in on a property, get in touch with us because we can give you an estimate of what the insurance costs on that are going to be, and you can plug that into your pro forma and refine your number a little bit. So, you know, if you're looking at a property, contact us, you know, right out of the gate. In terms of an existing portfolio, you know, where you might have, you know, a renewal date or multiple renewal dates on different properties throughout the year, you know, at least 60 days in advance, you get inside that 30-day window, there's a good chance your current agents, you know, probably block the marketplace up where it doesn't leave a whole lot of options, and trying to get the underwriter's attention to, you know, put something together in a couple weeks, you know, there's got to be a pretty compelling reason for them to do that. So for existing policies, get in touch a couple months out. For new purchases, get in touch with us right from the start.
Okay. Now, we had talked about this before, but what documents do you want from the seller?
Yeah. The one that I preach over and over and over again is ask for the currently valued loss runs for the property and the liability while you're in the due diligence phase, when they're more than willing to offer this stuff up. Because a lot of times when things go under contract, I mean, you know, sometimes I see the sellers aren't as quick to turn this stuff around. And we have to provide the loss runs of the seller, you know, to these carriers. And they have an impact. I mean, we had one about a month and a half ago was a purchase. We kept asking for loss runs, couldn't get them. Lo and behold, we finally get them. There had been $3 million worth of claims paid out, three different claims on this property. And the buyers were going to be paying a very inflated insurance cost for the next few years to pay for those losses that had occurred. And so, you know, always get that loss information as quickly as you can. It tells you a lot about the property too. I mean, if you go look at a property and you see, you know, it's had 3, 4, 5 different, you know, liability claims on it over the last year or two. Well, number one, it's going to cost you more, but number two, that might give you a real clear insight as type of tenants there, kind of what's going on with the property. So the losses tell you a lot. You know, other than that, you know, we a statement of values on the property that really kind of outlines, you know, all the buildings, the square footages, the year built, the, you know, wiring is in place, when the roof was last replaced, you know, all that building information, which we call, you know, a statement of values, you know, collect all of that. And I can help walk everybody through this. I mean, it's relatively simple stuff, but you really want to know each and every building and understand it, both from a size standpoint and from an infrastructure standpoint, wiring, roof, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, those are the main ones that really can kind of get us moving forward. We've simplified it on our end with some a document that I can send people that just pretty much outlines the 5 or 10 things that they need. So I can provide that to you.
Okay. So now the from a passive investor's perspective, so we talked a little bit about the individual lender requirements that they'll have for insurance. Should a passive investor be looking at how well their deal is being insured, or is the lender requirements cover all that they need?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think they definitely should. I mean, they've got capital in the deal, so they got capital at risk. You know, the banks are looking at it, you know, banks are looking at it very deeply. So effectively, you take a look at a passive investor, I mean, you're effectively the bank. And I'd say I'd look at it the exact same way. You know, I'd make sure that they're insured at the right, you know, at the right limits, that the right coverages are in place, and that you really understand that your capital is protected. So the answer to that is yes. You know, I mean, I think you should. And I think you should probably have some sort of input into that. You know, to make sure, again, you know, a lot of it depends on the size of the deal. You know, you start talking about some larger, you know, properties, you know, 100 unit plus type properties that are being financed, you know, through conventional lending, the insurance is getting looked at. I'm not saying you don't need to pay attention to it, but I'm just saying that it's getting scrutinized. But, you know, on the smaller side, which is, you know, typically we don't do a lot in that under 50, you know, unit market, but I see a lot of those deals where some, you know, private individual might be, you know, providing all the capital on that deal, and you know, they don't have any idea that the insurance is in place on it. And so, you know, it kind of is situational, but, you know, the universal answer to that question is, yeah, you need to understand it. You know, you might be a little bit more protected on the larger stuff, but on the smaller stuff, you really need to understand
it. And then, so let's talk a little bit about the risk management on a property, just the small things that a lot of properties I go to, it's clearly not looked at, but, you know, you got trip hazards and like you mentioned to me before the call here, the railings and being loose. What are some other things like that? And maybe discuss a little bit about why that's so important.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that pops in my mind, and this is not the only reason to do it, but I think it kind of sets the stage for a little bit of a deeper conversation on this. Trust me when I tell you that there are, you know, professional claimants in this world, you know, and when they see a condition that is, you know, when they see a condition that they can capitalize on, I see a lot of claims. And what I mean by that is loose hand railing. Oh, you know, I put my hand here, it slipped, I fell over it, you know, crack, now my back hurts, you know, wet conditions, slips and falls. You know, sidewalks that, you know, don't have, you know, might, you know, roots might have popped up a section of the concrete an inch higher, and now it's a trip hazard. You know, my favorite example is, you know, I had a client who had a tenant contact them and say that their air handler, which happened to be in the ceiling, was leaking. And they told them they would come over and take a look at it in a few minutes. And in the time period it took them to get from the office over to the tenant's apartment, lo and behold, the air handler had fallen out of the ceiling and cracked somebody on the head. You know, and which at first just sounded like a real bad claim until, you know, 2 weeks later and the same exact claim happened in the same exact format with somebody else. You know, and you start to see some patterns with this stuff, like over and over and over again. And, you know, and so that's just from like a worst case scenario. That's not to say that like all claims, you know, are fraudulent. I mean, I'm not trying to imply that at all. I'm just saying that if for no other reason, you know, realize that there are a lot of professional claimants out there. But, you know, with that being said, the, you know, my clients that maintain their properties at the highest level, you know, it's surprising they hardly ever have claims. Or when they do, it's a very one-off thing that just happened. But I do have clients that just don't keep the maintenance up on their place. And they have claims time over and over and over again, and they don't understand why. And, you know, everybody thinks of it like insurance, you know, that insurance is going to cover all the cost, you know, and it's really risk financing. I mean, you're going to end up paying for, you know, your loss history. So, I mean, if you know, your insurance costs are going to be a direct reflection of your loss history. So if you just have a lot of claims, you're going to be paying more for general liability insurance if they're casualty claims. You know, the same goes for property. You know, I mean, properties that are maintained well, they're kept painted, they have good roofs on them, you know, everything's in place. Well, when that windstorm comes through, those don't tend to get damaged nearly as much as the properties that aren't properly painted, that things aren't secured on, like the siding and the roofs are old. And, you know, those properties get hammered in these wind type scenarios. And so, you know, it's just, it's a very good idea to maintain these properties at a very, you know, at a very high level. And that's kind of my general commentary on it.
Yeah, it's interesting because it gives so many advantages, you know, not only the risk assessment, which I think, you know, to a lot of people may be unseen, but, you know, your tenants are going to see that. They're going to want to, you're more likely to attract a better tenant. So it benefits you in so many different ways. But so I'm glad you were able to put that perspective on it.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I got in the insurance business about 10 years ago, and the whole concept of looking at losses, I you know, and trying to predict the future just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I'm like, let me get this straight. You're going to look in the past, you're going to see what happened in the past, and you're going to base your rates off of what's going to happen in the future. And I can tell you 10 years later that is 100% accurate. You know, maybe not every time, like a loss can happen to anybody, mm-hmm. but, you know, the people that stay on top, you know, of their properties, that address their risk, they have a fraction of the claims of the people who just don't pay attention to it, you know, and whether you believe it or not, the insurance industry is based on it. So you might as well, you know, realize that and act accordingly, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, just another reason to run everything correctly and professionally, and so it's awesome. So I have one last question. So we talk about insurance master policies. So what are they? Why are they needed? And when does somebody need those?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question that I just can't give, you know, a direct answer to, but I can just talk about, you know, in general terms. I mean, you know, at the highest level, you know, when I think of a master, you know, policy, I'm thinking of, you know, a policy where you could add or take off a property and the rate for that property is already set. So you just move properties on, move properties off. You know, you have one renewal date for the entire portfolio. You know, that's a true master policy, but, you know, you typically only see those when you start talking about more than about, you know, 5,000, maybe even 10,000 units, somewhere in that range. So there aren't a lot of what I call true master, you know, policies that are out there. Kind of your next step back from that is really kind of a consolidation, you know, effort where, you know, you might have everything wrapped under one policy, but each one of the properties within that policy are rated individually. You know, so it feels and looks a lot like, quote unquote, a master, you know, but really it's just more of a consolidating many of them there. You know, and then there's, you know, kind of going back and talking about, you know, these big global, you know, master programs, which we do a lot of, you know, there's a lot of different ways to structure that. You know, if you've got a couple hundred million in values, you know, you might set a loss limit, say, for like 50 million, because chances are you're just not going to lose the entire portfolio. And you might structure the coverage like that, or you might get into a, you know, a layered insurance approach where certain carriers are taking on different layers of risk. you know, for the property. But generally speaking, you get into that really large scale stuff, yes, you need to be under a master. You start approaching about 1,000 units, I think that you need to have everything consolidated into some sort of master schedule. And that's, but you know, that's not per se to say that it's a master policy, it's more of a master schedule. So, you know, you tend to get some price breaks, you know, at that level from the carriers, and some consideration in terms of coverage and things like that of consolidating it all. But, you know, you also got to look at geographic components. I mean, there are certain carriers that are very good in geographic regions, you know, so if half of your properties are in Florida, and I keep using Florida, I'm sorry, it's just that I'm here, but if half of your properties are in Florida and half of your properties are in Georgia, and say the portfolio value is $100 million, you know, then you're probably not going to have one master to address both of those. You're probably going to have one Florida master for the catastrophic stuff, and you're probably going to have another master for the Georgia stuff, just because it'll make sense from a coverage standpoint and also from a price standpoint. So there's a lot of different factors, a lot of different ways to go with it. You know, all I would say is this: if you've got multiple properties and they're all insured with different carriers and different dates and sometimes different agents, you got to start consolidating that stuff. First steps, consolidate it with an agent. Next step, start consolidating what properties can be consolidated into a policy. You know, it's rarely is it a situation where you can just snap your fingers and put together a master policy for somebody. A lot of times it takes a lot of time. But, you know, I would advise people to not let it spin out of control on you, because I do see these scenarios. I'm dealing with one right now where, you know, they have 20 different properties, 20 different policies, 6 different agents, different renewal dates. And they've hired us to bring all this together, which we're going to do. But I'm just telling you, it's probably a 14-month endeavor to bring all of these, and a whole lot of work to bring all of these policies together. And it's like one of their tier one. If you went to their executives right now, they would say it's our number one priority. You know, and it's that important to them because it's just spun that much, that far out of control. You know, you'll have different deductibles, different limits. You'll be overpaying for insurance over here, supplying incorrect, insurance information and on other properties. And so it is something that can spin out of control very quickly. First steps, consolidate it with an agent, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like it can get out of hand real quickly. So I appreciate your feedback on that. So anything about insurance that you feel I may have missed?
No, I mean, I think we've talked a lot. I hope we haven't bored your listeners to death with I felt like I went kind of technically deep there at the start, which I normally try not to do. But it kind of goes back to my statement. And I just say, look, you don't need to understand the ins and outs of all of this stuff, but you really need to be working with somebody that you've got complete confidence in, really knows it. And generally speaking, the worst, the most egregious thing I find about the insurance industry is everybody's telling you they're an expert, you know, but what they don't tell you is they're a multifamily expert while they're sitting in front of you, and then an hour later they're sitting in front of a construction company and they're telling the construction company they're a construction expert.
Right.
You know, and you know, you start talking about insuring real estate portfolios and properties, I mean, there is a deep level of knowledge that you need to have, and you really need to be working with somebody that really understands the ins and the outs of it and can really provide you good guidance. Obviously, you know, we do a very good job at that. I say that humbly, but we do a very good job at that, you know, but if it's not us, just make sure that whoever you're working with really does know what they're doing, because, you know, come claim time when something bad happens, you know, it might be your buddy, it might be your friend, it might be some guy you've known for a long time, but, you know, when all of a sudden you're out of pocket hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, you're going to find out the value of that friendship very quickly.
That's very true. So Brian, how can somebody get a hold of you if they need to?
Yeah, sure. I'll give my contact information now. And I know Schimmel's a difficult name, so I'll spell that out for everybody. But again, the name of our firm is Multifamily Risk Advisors. I can be reached at 321-303-2840. My email address, I'll say it and spell it, is bschimmel@multifamilyra.com. So it's bschimmel@multifamilyra.com. The RA stands for Risk Advisors. And so, you know, feel free to reach out to me. I can definitely help you out.
Excellent. Well, I definitely appreciate you coming on here. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And I always seem to learn something new every time we talk. So I greatly appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you.
Yeah, no problem. I really enjoyed it. So it was good talking to you, Reid.